The Masked Moss Trooper. The man with a long brown trench coat jumped, landing in a puddle, to avoid a jet of steam that had just erupted in front of him. Dust spewed off his outer clothing, turning the air around him into a miniature sandstorm. Beside him, a shorter, red-headed boy, that looked like a miniature of the man without the moustache, giggled, and immediately stifled it as he received a stern look. Surveying his dripping shoes and waving dust from his eyes, the man startled once again when the engine whistle pierced the air, signalling imminent departure. Adjusting his top hat, his eyes resumed shifting around, taking in everyone and everything around him. Flitting quickly, his gaze rested for just a moment on each person in the depot, searching and moving on when he didn't find what he was searching for. Moving along the platform, a slight limp slowing his progress, he continually studied each person he passed. The boy followed in his wake, evading the Russian passengers and leaping from puddles, which the man splashed through, ignoring the spray of water and cries of alarm from others. While the man's coat and clothes were dusty and slightly rumpled, the boy's were downright filthy. Every step he took, little puffs of dust and dirt exploded off him, as if miniature creatures were engaged in combat on his clothing. The people the duo moved past were much cleaner, and most gave the tall man and his short companion a cursory, if disgusted, glance, some turning their noses up at the dusty, dirty clothing before resuming their goodbyes or, for those leaving the train, hellos with friends and family. The noise all around didn't distract the man from his intense study of each person, eyes flitting to each face as he slipped between the throng, making his way further along the coaches. Trailing, the boy hurried along, looking at the people all around him, though with less scrutiny. Several times he bumped someone, causing a small chorus of exclamatory cries as he struggled to keep up. Stopping suddenly, the tall man didn't notice when the boy bumped into him. A small dust cloud rose around the boy as, rubbing his nose, he took a step back and looked up into the narrow face, the piercing eyes still looking around.
"James, the current moment is not appropriate for levity."
Confused, the boy had forgotten the giggle of several moments ago, though the man had not. Forgetting his confusion, the boy saw the man's moustache quivering, causing him to stifle yet another laugh, and instead something that sounded like a snork came out. Clearing his throat, the boy puffed out his chest and threw his head back. This caused his baker boy cap to fly off, but was ignored for the moment.
"Yes, sir,"
he said, looking around as if he was spying on slews of evildoers. The man glared at the boy, but decided not to say anything as the boy took an overly dramatic stance while peering around. Again, the whistle sounded its long wail. The boy said it sounded like another banshee, earning an even sterner glare.
"James, we must locate Vincent, and we must endeavour to do so before he can board this train."
"The man," Martin stated. The boy thought every word sounded like an order from some general on a battlefield, but he kept a straight face, with only a small giggle, easily covered up by the sound of rushing feet as people hurried to climb on board. Throughout the station, people swarmed, saying goodbye to loved ones, with hugs being given all around. The man and boy struggled to see through the crowd. An insistent beeping joined the racket. Reaching into a coat pocket, Martin pulled out a device that looked like a small, mangled bike frame. Pulling and twisting, in moments he had assembled a mini dish sitting on a platform with a wire trailing to an apparatus that looked like a flight helmet. Handing the dish to his small companion, who immediately started moving it slowly around while watching a red blinking light on the back, Martin pulled the helmet on. Inside, he was greeted with an image, though fuzzy, of his chief.
"Yes, chief," he said. "Well, do you have him? Stop beating around the bush, my boy,"
the stern-looking man said, without even blinking. Martin answered,
"No, sir, we are trailing him, but since he destroyed our car, we have been unable to apprehend him." "Well, hurry it up, then. I don't have all day. It's vital that he be apprehended. We have been one step behind him for much too long. So quit standing around like it's tea time. Do your job."
The little man in the image, moustache quivering, slammed his hand down and everything went dark. Feeling a tugging, Martin removed the helmet to regard James.
"There,"
the boy yelled, pointing to a man about to board the train. The man, one hand gripping the rail to haul himself overboard, jerked his head, looking back at the pointing boy. His face was covered in a mask that looked like part leering demon and part wild animal. The eyes behind the mask widened, looking at the two now hurrying through the surging crowd. Cries of outrage erupted as the tall man shoved past people already pushing to get on, his limp giving him a drunken quality. The boy was left behind, struggling to catch up and collapse the instrument he still carried, and was knocked about as angered passengers once again pushed to get aboard. As James reached the steps, he was grabbed and hauled on board, just as the train gave a lurch and the wheels started turning slowly, dragging the behemoth down the tracks.
"Damn!"
Martin swore under his breath. He knew it would be harder to capture Vincent while on the moving train, but at least they knew he was definitely here. Entering the passenger car, he drew the boy along, hurrying down the aisle and receiving stern stares from passengers attempting to get situated. Trying to rectify the situation, James tipped his hat in apology to many, but was constantly getting yanked forward before he could smile and complete the kind overtures. Stopping, Martin waved his hand, trying to clear smoke and dust that still lingered in the car. Mimicking the movement, James also waved his hand, enthusiastically flapping it back and forth while coughing from smoke inhalation. Others, standing and seated, turned to glance to the newcomers. Given the man and boy a cursory once-over, they turned back to their conversations, ignoring the two. Reaching the end of the car, James dramatically wiped his forehead.
"Phew! That about did me in," he said.
Grimacing down at the boy, Martin didn't reply as he stepped onto the landing to reach the next car. Sensing movement from the corner of his eye, he started to turn, but was thrown off balance by an umbrella slamming into the side of his head. Staggering, he heard a screech from James. Trying to focus, Martin turned to where the attack had come. James hung onto the rail, his feet dangling above the ground, which was moving faster with each passing moment. Wavering as he tried to stand and reach the boy, Martin heard a clattering and saw feet, which he could only presume to be Vincent's, disappearing up the rail car ladder to the roof. Starting to reach for the ladder, he hesitated, hearing the boy's call for help behind him. Spinning, he snatched the dangling youngster and set the boy next to him.
"You must keep your feet on more solid ground, James, my boy."
James wiped his nose while looking up at the taller man. Fear played across his face, which then turned to anger.
"Well, I was trying to help you. That dirty, rotten scoundrel blindsided you, and before I could give him a pow..."
This was emphasised with a small, swinging fist.
He shoved me. I barely had time to grab the railing before I was drug under the clacking wheels."
This was emphasised by flinging him against the railing, arm thrown over his face for dramatic effect. Lowering his arms, eyes wide, he looked at Martin, utter conviction and sincerity on his face.
"Clacking wheels, James! We have just begun moving!"
Seeming to emphasise the statement, the train lurched, causing the man and boy to sway.
"It is of no consequence. Our foe has attained the roof, and I must labour to engage him before he can unleash the nefarious scheme."
Climbing the ladder, Martin hurried up. Hearing noise below him, he glanced down, seeing James climbing also.
"James, do go into the car and wait for me. It is much too dangerous up here. I could not be responsible for you and apprehend Martin at the same time."
The little face looked up, voice whining.
"But sir, I'm your partner."
Not getting the reaction he wanted, James tried again.
"Please, I won't screw up like last time. I promise. Cross my heart."
"Well, if I wasn't holding a ladder, I'd cross my heart." "No, and that is final. Wait for me inside and I will join you shortly."
Seeing the hurt on his young charge's face, Martin endeavoured to soften his harsh words.
"James, please go into the car and help guard the ladies there. When I return, I need to be assured that you kept them safe."
The little face beamed up before the boy hurried down the ladder and stepped into the passenger car. Martin resumed climbing, pulling himself onto the roof. Glancing the length of the train, he spied the other man heading towards the engine. Pushing off, he struggled against the wind, coat flapping behind him, the last of the dust streaming off. Grabbing at, and missing, his hat as the wind lifted it, he continued forward, not watching as the hat tumbled along the car and was lost in the wind. Fighting the rushing air, he couldn't stand and instead snaked onto the roof, pressed flat like the man ahead of him. Under his hands, the rough wood was warm, but cooling from the steady stream of air. Feeling his knee throb, he rubbed at it, clinging with one hand. Berating himself, he vowed to pay more attention from here on out. Silently, he thanked whatever gods looked down upon his kind that they hadn't seen fit to take James from him. As an afterthought, he added a quick thank you that he himself had not perished in the crash with the lorry. James had been so excited to be part of the pursuit. Martin hoped there were no unseen injuries. He would have to get James checked as soon as Vincent was caught. Coming back to the present moment, and ignoring the agony radiating up his leg, Martin pushed himself towards his foe, grim intent covering his face. Ahead, Vincent crawled along the train car, hair whipping behind him like sails, yet his mask remained firmly in place. The sound of the train and hurricane force winds hammered his ears, but kept any sound Martin made from reaching his enemy. Despite this, the man paused and slowly turned his head to stare back. Behind the mask, his eyes widened once again. The two men stared at each other while the train pounded through the countryside, and Martin could have sworn that Vincent smiled, and just the thought of that smile caused a shiver to run along his back. Straining, he pushed himself harder to catch up with the figure before him, which had resumed his own struggle towards the front of the train. As he neared Vincent, Martin reached out a gloved hand, grasping an ankle and causing the other man to snap his head around, both of them teetering on the knife edge of balance. Feeling the wind slamming into his chest, Martin gripped tighter, refusing to lose his foe again. Flattening himself even more, the master man lashed out with his free foot, striking the hand gripping his leg. Once, twice he smashed the fingers, causing Martin to grimace, but not let go. Yanking, Martin pulled the fleeing man closer, causing him to scramble to hang on, searching for any grip and handhold. Another pull brought Vincent's flapping coattails within Martin's reach. Straining, the tenseness causing his neck muscles swelling to near bursting, Martin was satisfied to see the other man inching closer despite his efforts to halt the backward progress. Vincent stopped struggling before flipping onto his back, twisting Martin's hand. "Ah!" Martin yelled, struggling to retain his grip. Looking at the still clutching man, Vincent grasped his coattails and spread his arms. The extreme wind lifted him like a kite. Astonished, Martin watched as the figure rose in the air above him, floating for a moment as if about to take off like the kite he resembled. With the force of a sledgehammer, the flying man slammed back down onto the rushing vehicle. Martin cried out once again as what felt like wildfire spread through his arm, and he released the other man. Without a moment's hesitation, Vincent started to scramble back the way they had come, kicking back at Martin, realizing he needed to end this quickly. Martin lunged towards the fleeing man, his leap enhanced by the wind. He landed on top of his foe, both of them sliding as they lost grip. Relentlessly, the wind tumbled and rolled both men until they fell between coaches, landing heavily, the rushing ground below them blurring past faster than any single item could be seen. Struggling to their feet, the two eyed each other, neither advancing towards the other. Martin wondered how he was going to apprehend his foe. Hearing the sounds of the train change, he glanced down to see water far below as they passed over a river. Looking back up, he realized his lapsing concentration may have cost him, as he caught movement and readied himself for an attack. Grinning as the devil before All Saints' Eve, Vincent reached over his shoulder, seeming to grab something on his back. Drawing his arm around, a sword appeared, slowly being drawn from an invisible scabbard. Sunlight danced along the sword's uneven blade. The triangle shape made this blade unique, and Martin knew he had to be careful, or he would get more than a cut from it. Vincent tensed, readying himself, knowing he could overtake the other man, but before he could close the distance, there was a clatter as the door behind him opened. A sound like someone smacking a tree was followed by a thud, as two pieces of coal bounced off the master man. Thrown off balance, he staggered, shooting a glare behind him. In the doorway stood James, arms loaded with coal, a third piece having just been launched. This piece struck the man, and a cracking sound could be heard over the rushing train. James, preparing to throw another piece of coal, spied the face beneath the mask, and staggered back a step, forgetting the coal still clutched in his hand. He cowered against the door, face draining of colour. Martin started to move until the masked man, mask now hanging precariously on his face, turned. Horror spread across Martin's features. The ornamental mask showed glimpses of the face beneath. And that face. Ruined flesh, pulsing with pus, running over fiery red scars. The muscles crinkled as the man smiled, causing the flesh to ooze more, and Martin took another step back. A flick of movement, as of smoke dispersing in the wind, and Vincent hurtled over the side, plunging down towards the flowing water below. The man and boy rushed to the rail, peering down at the diminishing figure, seeing it reach the end of the fall and splash into the rushing water. They watched as the ripples expanded out from the entry point. Just before they lost sight, Martin thought he saw a head bob to the surface. Tightening his lips, he knew it wasn't the last chance he had to capture his foe. Stepping back from the rail, he eyed his diminutive partner, who was still straining to see back to the water, a chunk of coal still cradled in his hand. James gave a small lump, as if startled, and realised what he was holding. Tossing it overboard, he turned to the bigger man, dusting his hands off. Seeing Martin looking at him, he stopped in mid-movement, staring back and wondered if he was in trouble. He relaxed when that familiar visage broke into a grin.
"James, my boy, you assisted me mightily tonight. Where, pray, did you acquire coal? We weren't near the coal car."
James' smile seemed to cover his whole face as he beamed back.
"You're welcome," he said. "You told me to guard the ladies in the coach, so I knew you had Vincent up top. I ran through the cars to grab some coal up front."
He waved his arms around, demonstrating how he had bravely run through the length of the train to accomplish his mission. Then his smile withered a bit.
"But we didn't catch him."
"True, very true. That doesn't mean we won't get him at the next opportunity. I believe there will be a next opportunity, and with your help, he may finally be in our grasp."
James's radiant smile returned.
"For now, though, young squire, I think we need to get you checked out, and I need a drink."
"But, sir, I'm fine, honest,"
James pleaded, looking at the older man with such intensity, Martin almost laughed, stifling it before the young boy noticed. Scowling fiercely, Martin said,
"You may be hurt from the crash. We can't take that chance."
All excitement left James's face as he dropped his head, shoulders slumping.
"Yes, sir. But there really isn't anywhere to get checked out where we are travelling. And I could really use a drink too."
His voice was small, but not whining. Given the appearance of thinking it over, Martin said,
"You just may be right. Since we can do little to ensure your health, we might as well quench our thirst."
"You mean I can have a beer?"
James asked, hopefulness echoed on all his features.
"No, this means you can have a root beer. I will drink the beer."
Shrugging his shoulders, James skipped ahead, eager to drink his treat, leaving his limping but smiling partner.